Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to another edition of Politics Done Right. Loyal listeners will recognize right away that this is not Egberto Willis. This is Greg Russack, a Coffee Party volunteer and member, sitting in proudly for Egberto today. Egberto is doing his civic duty with the Kingwood area Democrats today. He's at a candidate meet and greet brunch. Today, the conversation, hopefully a lot of conversation, is going to be around transpartisanship. Now, I don't profess to know what transpartisanship means. I got some ideas, a lot of it thanks in most part, actually, to my involvement with the Coffee Party. But what I'd really like to hear today is what you think transpartisanship means. What is it? Is it a viable approach? Is it a strategy that can work in a very partisan and divided country? I'm interested in hearing what you have to say. What do you believe transpartisanship can do for us as people, for the country, and most importantly, perhaps what it means in terms of our governance? Now, before I get started, I just want to give everybody a bit of background on the Coffee Party. Loyal listeners, of course, will know all of this. This is information that I think is important to share, just so you get a sense as to who the Coffee Party is. Now, my views are my own. I'm not sitting in and expressing any official positions about the Coffee Party, but let me tell you who the Coffee Party is. And this comes right from the website, and that website is Coffee Party USA. That's all one word, coffeepartyusa.com. Coffee Party USA is a grassroots, nonpartisan movement. The name's to restore the principles and spirit of democracy in America. It started on Facebook as a popular fan page in January 2010 and has since blossomed into a national nonprofit organization with a network of over 500,000 people and dozens of local chapters. Our path to restoring democracy in America includes identifying and advocating for legislative fixes to reform campaign finance laws, Wall Street regulations, and the tax code, as well as promoting cultural changes to address political disengagement, polarization, and widespread misinformation. Our activities often center around encouraging inclusive, civil, fact-based, solution-oriented dialogue online and in public places such as coffee houses, in which we meet, talk, become informed, and engaged as fellow Americans, rather than as members of political parties. We believe that we share common goals as a people. We all want to live in safe communities with access to well-paid jobs that will allow us to provide our families, help us secure a decent education for our children, and allow us to access adequate health care. We call upon the American people to transcend the hyper-partisanship that is so common today and move toward organizing communities around the mutual desire for ongoing, responsible civic engagement. That information goes on, and it ends with an important statement, and that is this. We operate entirely independently of political parties, and we do not endorse candidates. So that's who the Coffee Party is, and I wanted to make sure and share that with you, whether you're listening today for the first time or whether you may be hearing this at a later point in time. Make sure and check out the CoffeePartyUSA.com website. Check us out on Facebook as well. And if you like what you see and you like the idea of a nonpartisan, in fact, a transpartisan approach to our government, to our country, then I'm going to ask you to please consider a donation. Become a member. be part of the movement that can make a change in this country. Now, as far as I go, I'm honored to be sitting in for Egberto today, and I just thought I would give you some idea about who I am. I'm a Coffee Party volunteer and a member. I really do admire the work that they've been doing for the last several years. I'm a volunteer in so much as I provide a little bit of time in helping to provide links to information that is important to an informed citizenry. There are lots of ways for individuals to be involved with the Coffee Party. Personally, again, I enjoy my responsibilities as a news curator. I get a chance to see information submitted from all kinds of folks, from all kinds of places. I get a chance to read that information. It gives me a perspective that I probably wouldn't have any other way from lots of different, lots of different folks. And that information ends up in what we call a Scoop It news page. You can find us there as well, and that website is www.scoopit.com. And if you search for Coffee Party USA, you'll find us there. It's like a newspaper. You get a chance to be part of the media by submitting your articles to us. We review them, make sure that they're okay. You know, we're not looking for any, we're not picking fights, we're not trying to be uncivil. You know, this is very important to us here in the Coffee Party. We want to maintain a civil dialogue and a discourse. And we share that information on that Scoop It page. You become part of the media in that respect. We invite you to become an active participant in these Blog Talk radio shows, as well as on Facebook and on Twitter. Again, find us there fairly easily by doing a search on Coffee Party USA. And again, I want to just emphasize the views are my own today. And really, I'm hoping to hear yours. I'm looking for perspectives on what transpartisanship might mean to you, what it might mean to the country, and what it might mean as a pathway forward. Now, when I did some digging around, and I tried to find what I guess would be a definition of what transpartisanship might be. There's a website called transpartisancenter.org. Now, I will admit, I don't know a lot about this organization. I really discovered them as part of the preparation for today's show. But here's what they have to say about themselves. It was created for two basic purposes: to promote the humanization of the political process, the discovery of common ground by bringing conservatives, liberals, libertarians, progressives, and non-aligned leaders together in facilitated dialogues, and create the space for innovative and creative solutions to our pressing challenges to enter into the body politic. The second thing is to promote, support, and coordinate transpartisan social and political coalition. Sounds good to me. I think it would sound good to just about anybody. Again, with the kind of hyper-partisanship that exists today, bipartisanship almost seems like a dream in most cases, a fantasy even. We don't seem to be living in a time when there is even much attempt at bipartisanship, especially in Washington, D.C. Anybody who's paid attention, of course, to Congress over the last several years knows that we are not getting forward very far in very many ways. We can debate all day about where the fault might lie. That won't get us very far. It won't create a solution. And I have to admit that from a partisan perspective. Now, this is a little bit more about me. I am registered nonpartisan. I always have been, ever since I turned 18 years old. And what that means in the state of Pennsylvania is that I'm not a member of one of the clubs. I don't get the vote in primaries. I have to wait for the general elections. And I have to tell you, I'm kind of okay with that. I mean, when you get right down to it, if I'm not enrolling in a particular party, if I'm not casting my lot in with a particular movement or a political faction, then should I really have the opportunity to vote for who will represent that party? That would be, I think, a legitimate question to ask. Now, if I was able to vote in primaries, I would. I would definitely cast my ballot, and I would do that for both of the major parties. if I was given that opportunity. But again, as a registered nonpartisan, I completely understand, and I don't necessarily object that strongly to the fact that I can't vote in those primaries. But that's who I am. I'm a nonpartisan. I'm also very proud to say that you can call me a liberal. If by that you mean I am for marriage equality, I am for single-payer health care, I am for women's rights, I am for affirmative action, I am for environmental protection, and the list goes on. If that's what it means to be liberal, then that's who I am. And I take great pride in the fact that I am also what I call a conscientious capitalist. I have been in the technology industry my entire career. Almost all of it has been in sales and marketing. I like money. I like making money. But I also believe that capitalism has the opportunity to have more than really just an income statement that drives it. There is an opportunity for a conscience to be applied to the idea of making money. I'm also for better government. You know, I'm not at all happy that the NSA is spying on us. I do not like the fact that the president has the ability to create kill lists and launch drones in order to essentially assassinate people around the world. Whether we suspect them of a crime or a terrorist action or not, I thought we lived in a system in which there was due process. I'm not at all a fan of big government if what that means is continuing to spend more and more on a defense department that is already several times larger than any other country on the planet. I'm not a big fan of the empire that we run and that we built. And in thinking about all this and trying to understand, so what's the transpartisan approach to this? I don't know what that is, but it looks like we've got some folks who want to get in on the conversation, and so maybe they'll have some answers for us. 210, I'm bringing you into this discussion. Who are you? Where are you calling from? And what do you think?
Yes, John from San Antonio. How you doing, Greg?
Hey, I'm doing well. John, and yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I just want to talk a little bit about transpartisan politics, and I think the biggest problem with transpartisan politics is transpartisans can't objectively evaluate what is actually happening in the country because transpartisans refuse to take sides on many issues. And if transpartisans do take a side, they refuse to acknowledge that they have millions of people who have similar ideas, and they do not want to join forces with them because they're partisans. This is outlined in the Coffee Party white paper, which you referred to earlier, called Who We Are. There's a quote from that paper who says that their activities often center around inclusive, civil, fact-based, solutions-oriented dialogue online and public places such as coffee houses, in which we meet, talk, become informed, and engage as fellow Americans rather than members of political parties. Now, the last part of that sentence implies that members of political parties are inferior, to transpartisans, which is not very civil. You can't say the vast majority of people in this country who are partisans, should not have conversations about politics. After all political parties are people who have similar ideas who band together to get those ideas put into law. One of the reasons I don't support Republicans is their belief in supply side trickle down economics. The fact is, in 2014, Republicans cannot win public office unless they support trickle down economics. Trickle down economics is one of the biggest impediments to having a fair economic system, not one that benefits the wealthy. The most optimistic sign of the week for me was Thomas Piketty's book Capital in the 21st Century, which is the most thorough book on income inequality ever written, which evaluates tax rates over the past several centuries and of several large economic powers such as the United States, France, Sweden, etc. and proposes remedies. Right now, Elizabeth Warren's book, A Fighting Chance, is sitting at number 6 on Amazon. I'm extremely hopeful to see people want to learn more about macroeconomics and that these brilliant minds are helping America's become more informed. And so so that's kind of my take on transpartisanship. And I think it's kind of a mirage that's being presented. And also, what you were talking about is not joining a political party, yet the fact that you were saying, you know, you were a liberal, I think that's also a kind of a contradiction, because if there are, you know, within the Democratic Party, most people understand that there are two wings. One is the more corporate, you know, funded wing, and the other is the more progressive wing. But if you're not a member of the Democratic Party, you can't ever vote for the progressives because you refuse to call yourself a partisan, a Democrat. And
John,
so,
you made some very good points. I want to address a couple of those things very quickly, and then bring another caller into the discussion. I will tell you very candidly, I struggle with my registered nonpartisanship for a lot of the reasons you are describing right now, and I don't necessarily disagree with your perspective that on at some point in the discussion, at some point in the dialogue, inclusive as it might be, you need to take action. And that's the part that I think I struggle with the most in terms of the idea of transpartisanship. I include and will include people in the discussion, regardless of their party affiliation, to a point, but toward an action. And one of the things that I don't believe that we see enough of is, once the conversation has taken place, what do we do now? How do we bridge a divide that exists between individuals who, let's just say, from the marriage equality perspective, believe that it's kind of unconscionable to in the 21st century to have somebody dictate to someone else who they can and cannot marry. But their belief may be based on such a strong religious foundation that it's unconscionable for them to figure out how it's possible that anyone would want to do that. Those are the kinds of divides that I understand the principle of transpartisanship trying to bridge, but I just don't know how that's going to work in reality, and I'm hoping to learn something about that today. Let's bring in 503 into the conversation. 503, tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what you think about this. John, I'm leaving your mic hot, by the way. 503,
yes, this is Dan Aronson. Champion of transpartisanship, calling from Portland, Oregon.
Mr. Transpartisanship himself, welcome.
I heard Brother John testifying, and I said, you know what? I said we need to help Brother John out. And
help
so,
us out, Dan. Help us out. What do you got?
So first of all, John said that there, from the white paper, that it implies that people from parties are not as good as transpartisans. That is a misinterpretation, sir. So what transpartisanship pushes is the idea to engage, right? We engage in political and social bridge building for the sake of finding solutions to common problems, working above and beyond ideological dogmas, putting country first. So what that last sentence is referring to are people that just toe the party line. And you cannot, you know, whatever my party says, I'm backing it 100%. There is no discussion. The Tea Party is the one who came out and said that, right? The Tea Party was the first one to say, I'm drawing a line in the sand, and no, I'm not crossing it, and it's not immovable, and I don't want to talk about it and forget you. So that's kind of how the Coffee Party, like, you know, came about, right? So transpartisanship doesn't say it. It just says we work above the dogma that a lot of people labor under, and we look for solutions.
So Dan, if I can just kind of paraphrase what you're saying, you don't mind if someone comes to the conversation with a partisan set of beliefs and a partisan set of policy goals, do you?
No, I expect it. I expect that people will be part. Transpartisanship is not nonpartisanship, nor is it bipartisanship. It's simply saying we're going to sit down and have a discussion. I'm going to listen respectfully to what you have to say. You do the same with me. Let's see if we can find some common ground. Now, you brought up, I think, one of the quintessential examples, Greg, when you talked about the equality of marriage. Not everything. This is the mindset that a lot of people don't get about transpartisan. You go into the conversation knowing that you're not going to be able to find common ground on every single issue. The idea is let's list out issues and let's see which ones we can find common ground on. And the one I always love is the one talking about crony capitalism. Who likes crony capitalism? Which party is for crony capitalism? None. No party is for crony capitalism. Only cronies are for crony capitalism.
Well, no party's out loud about it. I think you could make an argument, actually, that every party is for some degree of crony capitalism only because of now the influence of money in politics. But, John, what do you have to say to Dan in terms of what he's talking about from a transpartisan perspective?
Well, I mean, if you look at the sentence, it says, in which we meet, talk, become informed, and engage as fellow Americans rather than as member of political parties. Now, I understand Dan's interpretation is he's saying, as opposed to somebody who portrays political dogma, and I do agree with that people shouldn't portray strict political dogma. And let me give an example of that. If you're an Obama supporter, you know, you agree with everything that Obama does. And even though I voted for him twice, you know, I'm proud to say that, I don't support a lot of the things that he does. I don't support how he's going around to Asia and supporting the TPP. I don't support his drone program, and I don't support the NSA. He hasn't been tough enough with the banks. I could go on and on and on. So, I mean, but that doesn't mean I'm a transpartisan. That means that I don't agree with him. I mean,
can I disagree with you, John? That means you are a transpartisan. Because if you sit down with a libertarian, he will agree with you about all those things you just said that the president is doing that are wrong, especially like the drone attacks. If you sit down with a Republican, most likely they are against drone. I don't know. I've never met the person who is like, yeah, we should do these drone attacks. I've never met that person. So if you're willing to have that conversation with somebody who has who comes at it from a different party or a different philosophical point of view, no, sir, you are fulfilling the transpartisan mission, and I salute you for it.
Well,
we'll take transpartisanship as a compliment from now on, then, on some degree, I guess, right? That being transpartisan is in fact, and let me just make sure I'm getting this, because, you know, I'm trying to figure out what does it mean. It's okay to be a member of a political party and not be in complete lockstep and agreement with everything that's happening with that party and the people who represent it, and, you know, only the most blind follower of any organization would be 100% in lockstep with absolutely everything they do, and I think we would all agree that's a minority position. But here's the question I still have, Dan, and I'm still struggling with this question. And you've heard me ask this question before. What do you do next?
Well, first off, let me add this to your definition of transpartisan. It's just about being willing to have that respectful conversation. If you're willing to sit down and have that respectful conversation and actually listen to what the other person is saying, now, we may very well just at the end of the conversation agree, you know what, we're not going to agree on this one. And so, okay, let's move on to something else and let's see but the idea is it's to seek the agreement, right, to seek those things we can agree on and then constitute some form of action. That is the next thing, right? Because you're right, talk for the sake of talk. What's the point? You're right. We got to
right.
do stuff. So if we all
right.
agree that drone strikes are bad, well, what we got to do is we have to flood the White House with millions and millions and millions of petitions, signatures on a petition that says stop the drone attacks. And if they don't, then we vote that guy out and we vote in somebody who won't do drone attacks.
Good. So now, let's just check back with John. John, you're good with that too, right? If we all three agree that we shouldn't have a president sitting in a White House developing kill lists and having an agency of that government launch drone strikes against any human being anywhere on the planet for any reason, and we express ourselves in terms of that unhappiness, and that still continues, then, Dan, where I was going was, what do we do then? And you said it. We need to start to identify prospective leaders who match those values and principles and then vote for them, do we not?
Yeah, I mean, we do, but it's bigger than that because, I mean, first of all, I'm not going to accept it that I'm transpartisan because I'm not. I mean, I am a partisan very much, and I don't shy away from that. But, I mean, I think there's a difference between following dogma and being transpartisan. And as far as actually, you know, saying just because Obama not only has increased the drone program, you got to remember the drone program did start under Bush, but he has definitely increased it, doesn't mean that, I mean, the drone program is just one issue. I mean, there's,
right.
you know, thousands of issues. And so, I mean, if I felt, you know, somebody who actually had a legitimate chance that I agreed with more than Obama, I would have voted against him. But, I mean, my choice, I mean, I know Dan is going to disagree also. He could say I should vote for Jill Stein or whoever. But, I mean, in my mind, my choice was, Obama or Romney. And so I voted for Obama, despite his faults. I mean, the same thing like Roberto called in last night, Roberto Rodrigo, and said, he made a comment about FDR and how, you know, FDR was what he did with the Japanese prisoners of war on the West Coast was totally awful. And, I mean, there's no way that anybody can disagree with that. I mean, obviously some people do, Michelle Malkin and other people, but, I mean, very few people take that stance, and I don't take
right.
that stance. But that doesn't
right.
mean that FDR wasn't, in my opinion, he was the greatest president in our country's history. And so nobody is perfect. And, you know, we have to have our own values, but we also have to realize that perfection just doesn't happen. I mean, when Elizabeth Warren was on The Daily Show, Jon Stewart brought up her vote. It was one of these Obamacare repeal votes to where
yep.
The medical device tax, she voted to repeal it. And
right.
that was a bad vote. Even though I think Elizabeth Warren is so fantastic, it was a bad vote that she did. And Bernie Sanders will have bad votes. And other
right.
you know, people will have bad votes. That's just part of being human. I mean, nobody is perfect, and, you know, we are limited by the politicians that run. Right now, there isn't a Democrat running at all in my congressional district, in 2014. And so,
sounds like an opening,
you know,
John. Sounds like an opening for you. Maybe you ought to.
I seriously thought about it. Let me say.
Well, in the country needs people like you, John. And I want to leave you and Dan hot. We've got another caller who wants to get in on the conversation. This is area code 781. 781, where are you calling from and what do you think?
Hi, Greg. It's Kathleen from Scituate.
Hey, how you doing, Kathleen? Yeah, how are you, dear?
I'm doing well. I'm good.
Welcome to the conversation. What do you think?
Thank you. Well, it's a good one, as always, on Blog Talk. I actually have a question, and maybe Dan can give me some insight. I just came back from a visit to Florida, and one of the people I was staying with, he likes to talk politics. He's in his mid-60s. And so I always try and go into it with transpartisanship in mind. And when I try to connect with him, like, especially about solutions to problems, you know, because he likes to beat up the poor, and there's a lot of that going around. And, you know, I said to him, there's some simple common sense steps that can be taken to address the concerns in the welfare program. It's not that complicated. And so that worked with him. Like, he agreed with me. But on other stuff, when I talk about, like, all the negativity in politics today, on the TV, all over the place, that I just lost my train of thought.
You got him converted on the issue of picking on the poor, it sounds like, but there were still other issues that he didn't want to talk about, maybe.
No, he didn't. It's not that. It's every subject I brought up, he turned it to Obama. Every single one. And trying to be transpartisan, trying to find things in common is good, and it's good to attempt that. But with him, I ran into a brick wall. And he thinks Obama's responsible for everything, which I don't understand how an intelligent person can hold that position. We don't live in a monarchy.
That's a great point, Kathleen. That's a great point. We all tend to give way too much blame or place way too much blame and not give nearly enough credit to the people that we elect, and that's especially, I think, true with a president. I will tell you, and mm-hmm. I will admit this freely, I did that constantly when W was in the office. I was guilty of the same thing. I'm not above admitting that when it comes to finding a villain, it's really easy to pick on whoever is sitting in the White House, forgetting the fact that there's an entire Congress that is actually responsible for the legislative branch of government.
Right, right, exactly. They ignore the other two branches of government. That's convenient.
Go ahead, Kathleen.
I just want to know what your reflections are on the...
Piece of cake, Catherine.
My frustration, I guess. What do you think, Dan?
Piece of cake?
Yep. All right.
Here's how simple it is.
Lay it on me.
Partisanship, in order to succeed, takes two. What you mm-hmm. ran into was the person who could not rise above his own dogma and his own philosophies. I mean, he is myopic to the nth degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's focusing straight on Obama and saying, this is the guy who's responsible, and I am not going to move, and I don't even want to have a discussion if it doesn't end with blaming Obama with you. And
exactly.
That's the guy who's not transpartisan. And what does that lead to? That leads to obstructionists. I will say, on whole, W was an obstructionist, Greg. I will say, on whole, the Republican minority in Congress are obstructionists. They are
mm-hmm.
non-transpartisan. It's like they won't even have the conversation. Ryan, or the guy from Cruz from Texas, those guys are probably the least transpartisan people in the world.
Yes.
And that's the problem. You can't have a discussion with somebody who's not transpartisan.
Right.
Unless you're talking to somebody who agrees with you, but then you're not moving anything forward, right?
Then what's
so
the point?
You just have to breathe deep and go, okay, let's talk about baseball. Just move on from that guy. Because he's not being transpartisan. If everybody was transpartisan, and this is for Brother John, be partisan. Transpartisan does not mean nonpartisan. Be partisan like crazy, but be willing to have a respectful discussion about an issue with somebody who disagrees with you. And again, the answer may well be, we're just not going to agree on this one. What's the next issue? And eventually you go and you find one that you agree on, and then that's when you can start building a course of action to fix it.
This is what I love about the coffee party, and this is what I love about the people on this show right now, and the people who are active and mostly involved with the coffee party on social media, of course, with some exceptions, and that is we all seem willing to have the conversation. We all seem willing to do it in a respectful and a civil way, and we all are willing to agree to disagree respectfully without it getting nasty and ugly. But I always end up coming back to this one big question, and that is, okay, now what? We can agree on certain things, and we can even agree on what to do about those things. If we all agree that we need to take money out of politics, and we all agree that the money has corrupted our political system to the point where we all, across the spectrum, can come to together and say that these people don't listen to us anymore. So we have to change that dynamic.
You need one more thing, Greg, in order to make this happen. And John pointed it out very exactly. And at any given time, there's hundreds of issues, right? We also have to agree that we are going to make this our top priority. And we are going to set aside the things we don't agree on for temporarily, and we're going to fix this one thing. And if we keep doing that, and then we find the next thing we agree on and we fix that, and we can eliminate all of the things that we agree should be eliminated and fix all of the things we agree we should be fixed, like, you know, fair taxation. How about, I mean, and if you look at polling data, there are at least minimally a half a dozen things that polling data says we agree on as a country, that bipartisanly we agree on. We just have to, that's the last piece of the puzzle, is we have to agree. Getting money out of politics is our top issue, right? That's what Lessig's march in New Hampshire was all about, saying that this is the, we must get everybody on record saying, what are you going to do about it? This is what we care about. You got to fix this. Then
can I jump in?
Go ahead, Kathleen.
Were you done, Dan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I actually had a conversation with this man also about the Article 5 convention that I'm involved in to try and get Citizens United reversed, and now probably McCutcheon reversed. But he, first of all, he, you know, since I lean to the left, he thought this was just a hippie, liberal, you know, some kind of agenda trying to get money out of politics and get human beings back in. But when I actually explained to him what it was about, and that it affects him directly. You know, even if your concern is taxes, this affects you because the people at the top with their tax system are screwing everybody else. So I tried to make that a reality for him, and I think I did.
Good for you. You did it in a civil way, I'll bet, right? I mean, it was... You didn't go on the attack. You weren't offensive.
No.
You didn't do any of that sort of thing, right?
No, because I enjoy political discussion. So I wasn't trying to convert him. I'm just telling him, like, this is why I'm doing this, for the next generation.
John, what do you think? Is money in politics the big issue that we've got to get fixed first and foremost, or is there something else that has to happen before that?
Well, it's such a high hurdle. I mean, it should certainly be at the top of everybody's mind. But I'm gonna go ahead and read from the 2012 Democratic Party platform, and it's referring to Citizens United. It says, our political system is under assault by those who believe that special interests should be able to buy whatever they want in our society, including our government. Our opponents have applauded applauded the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United and welcomed the new flow of special interest money with open arms. In stark contrast, we believe we must take immediate action to curb the influence of lobbyists and the special interests in our political institutions. We support campaign finance reform by constitutional amendment if necessary. We support legislation to close loopholes and require greater disclosures of campaign spending. We support requiring groups to influence elections to reveal their donors so that the public will know who's funding the election ads it sees. Now, the Republican point of view is basically that this is an infringement on their First Amendment rights. And so there is a very strong, you know, distinct gap between the Democrats and the Republicans on this. And other issues that the Coffee Party has talked about, like, you know, reforming Wall Street.
Before we go on, can I ask, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, John, but I got to ask you a question. Ask you a question. Who did Hillary Clinton just take a humongous campaign donation from?
I don't know.
Goldman Sachs.
Right.
Goldman Sachs. To write something on a website, you know what? That's talking the talk.
It's not a website.
They're not walking the walk. They're not walking the walk.
Well, okay, I'd like for you to look up all the states that have actually signed petitions. I believe there are four states. I had this written down before. I couldn't find it earlier. But, I mean, the states that have actually passed laws to amend the Constitution to revise Citizens United.
It's actually 16.
Okay. Well, I don't think
it's
that,
16.
Not in both houses, though. Not in both houses. I think it's only four that have passed both houses. But anyway, I mean, it's easy enough to look that up. And almost all of those, and almost all the people that voted for those, are Democrats. And this is, if you look at actually who's sponsoring legislation, it's almost all of them are Democrats. I mean, there are a few Republicans, and I applaud those Republicans. I applaud when Republicans do the right thing. You know, so I'm not going to condemn them every time. If they actually take a stand and it helps the country, I applaud that. But I'm just saying it is overwhelmingly Democratic, and you should not be blind to that. And
I'm not, and I will admit that I was being myopic and looking. I was just looking at the federal level. You're right on the state level. You're absolutely correct on the state level that there's more going on there. But let me ask you this question: what state thumbed their nose at the FEC and said, "Screw you, we're gonna enact local campaign finance reform, whether you like it or not, Supreme Court." That would be Montana, very red, and led by Republicans.
Right.
So all
with
I'm saying
Democratic
is,
Democratic governor.
So we see a crack, an opportunity, a possibility where we can agree on. So let's frack that crack.
Actually, please don't use the word frack on my show.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I want to go back to something Kathleen had interjected into that and ask her to expand on that. Kathleen, you had said something about 16 states. What were you referring to there?
I was referring to resolutions. Not passed. I didn't realize he was just talking about the resolutions that have been passed. But it's a lot more than...
Resolutions for what, Kathleen?
Calling for an Article 5 convention of the state.
Okay. Okay, that was the part I didn't connect.
There were 16 on the books that have resolutions, active resolutions. Of course, not for much longer because they're going on recess.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Kathleen, finish, please.
No, I just wanted to say there's more every month that are, proposing resolutions, and counties and towns have taken it upon themselves to do the same, calling for an Article 5 convention on the state level.
So I want to, John, before I give you a chance to respond, John, Kathleen, I wanted to ask you to, and I kind of know the answer to this question, but I want to ask it anyway so that listeners will hear it as well. How do you know all that?
I researched it and talked to people about it. A lot of people at Coffee Party and a lot of other people I know on Facebook. And, you know, getting involved with Wolfpack, that's where I learned. And, you know, I do understand the statistics about Democrats and Republicans when it comes to this issue, but it's not a left versus right. It's a right versus wrong issue. Even though Democrats are on board, that doesn't mean it's a wrong idea or a wrong solution. You know what I mean? It can't be a partisan thing because we'll never get it done.
That is a wonderful segue, Kathleen, for me to jump in here with a quick Coffee Party promotion, because we're committed to doing the same thing, and that is bringing information to people, giving them a chance to review it and analyze it themselves, and we're doing that through this as one of its channels. That's Blog Talk.
Hi, this is Dan Aronson, and you're listening to Press One for Democracy. Heard here every Monday night on Coffee Party Radio starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Did you know that there's an entire lineup of Coffee Party Radio shows that airs each week? On Thursdays, our executive director, Janine Loudon, hosts Lunch with Loudon, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Saturdays, Egberto Willis hosts Politics Done Right, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the newest edition of our Coffee Party Radio family joins us on Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's Bud Fields with Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style. And remember, unlike our current federal government, Coffee Party Radio is of the people, by the people, and for the people. Each show, you'll have the chance to call in at area code 646-929-2495 so you can stand up and be heard. When you can't make it with us live, remember that all of our shows are available to you 24/7 in our online archives. So again, this is Dan Aronson on behalf of all Coffee Party Radio hosts and our entire membership saying thanks for joining us to discuss the issues of the day, the Coffee Party way.
That was Dan Aronson. And Dan, obviously this is not the Press One for Democracy show, but nonetheless, you do a fabulous job of promoting all those shows, and I just want to thank you for doing that, all the work that you do with the Coffee Party. You're certainly one of the most active and well-informed leaders that the organization has, and if we can get more people involved in this community, I do think that we can make a difference. We need more people like you, like John, like Kathleen, to be taking the effort, putting the energy in, being informed, and making an informed decision. Don't let someone else tell you what to think. Go out and get the facts and then decide for yourself. So, John, you sounds like you wanted to kind of respond to what Kathleen maybe was talking about in terms of some of the movements that are happening in some of the states to bring an Article 5 convention and to do something to change the Constitution. Maybe you can help us and our listeners to fill in some of the gaps there as well, too.
Yeah, I think that there's a difference between having an Article 5 convention and actually passing a law to overturn Citizens United. In fact, most of these laws are actually specifically designed to overturn Citizens United. And they're not to have a constitutional Article 5 convention, because if that happens, basically everything is on the table. The entire Constitution, freedom of expression, the Fourth Amendment, the 14th Amendment, and there's a lot of hardcore conservatives that want this now to happen, because they want to take away things like the separation between church and state. They want to make this a theocratic Christian nation. And there's tons of people. Tom Coburn was talking about working towards this. And so there's a big difference between trying to overturn Citizens United and having a Article 5 convention. And
You make some interesting points there, John, and I think those are things that maybe we don't always think about or remember, but Dan has messaged me and says he'd like to make a kind of a parting statement. He's got to run. So, Dan, I want to just turn things over to you. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. So, yeah, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to do coffee party work. Myself and Debbie Lynn Molyneux are driving up to meet Janine Loudon for lunch and discuss coffee party strategy. So we're working
good.
Hard for the cause, even on the weekends.
Good.
And I appreciate all the things
all.
You – I will do that. And I appreciate all the work you do, Greg. You are way too modest about how much time you spend on your political activism and on working for the coffee party. You are far too modest, sir. You are a phenomenal contributor. We appreciate everything you do. And would of course, love to see more people get involved. Just as a parting statement, again, on just getting back to the transpartisanship. And John, you are right. There are definite differences between Democrats and Republicans. There's no doubt. But again, the whole point of transpartisanship is finding that little crack, that little sliver of agreement, and then drilling on it. Since we can't frack it, we'll drill on it. And until we can fix it. And whether it's through amending the Constitution, whether it's through a Article 5 convention, the only thing I'd say about the Article 5 convention really quick is that I hear what you're saying about some of these very fringe groups that want to do things. We have to remember it takes 75% of the country to agree to pass something. I don't think they have anywhere near 75% of the country when it comes to turning this into a secular country. Or, I'm sorry, is it secular or non-secular? I was going to make
that.
Non-secular. Anyway. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think they're going to get 75% behind that, nor are they going to get 75% behind repealing the Second Amendment and getting guns out of the hands of people. Because that's what the gun people say. Oh, they'll repeal the Second Amendment. They'll take my guns away. There's no way 75% of the country is going to agree to that. It's not going to happen. So I think we need to back down a little bit on the fear factor, because there's very few things that 75% of the Americans agree on. One of those is overturning Citizens United. So let's pick that one and go for it.
Thanks, Dan. And again, thanks to you, to Debbie Lynn, to Janine, all the rest of the leadership of the Coffee Party, and thank you for your kind words. We're here, all of us are here today on a Saturday because we care enough to try and exchange some ideas, help each other to understand what the challenges are, talk about what we can do about them, where we can find some common ground. And in some ways, John, I will echo what you were saying earlier in terms of partisanship. While I'm registered as nonpartisan, I do admit that I caucus with the Democrats. I do that for a lot of reasons, mostly because as bad as both parties seem to be, I just don't accept the proposition that they are equally bad. And unless and until we can find a means by which legitimate third parties, and I don't mean legitimate in terms of their policies, their beliefs, their objectives, I just mean legitimate in terms of being able to be elected. I personally have voted for independent candidates. I was the guy in my first election voting for Anderson. I voted for Ross Perot twice. I never thought I was throwing my vote away, but we've gotten to this point now where the gaps, the divides seem so great, so insurmountable, the common ground of things like money and politics. I will say this, it still worries me as to what it looks like after we've won that battle. And here's what I mean. If we take all the money out of politics, and and our elections are driven solely by small individual donations, that means we all have an equal and fair voice, and I'm perfectly fine with that. I like that idea. I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't know how lobbying ever is eliminated from the equation. I really don't. And I don't equate a union lobby with a bank lobby. They are not the same thing. They are, in principle at least, attempting to accomplish fundamentally different kinds of changes in our government. And I know which side of that I would be on. And I don't know if that's such a horrible thing either. that's the part that is still hard for me to weave into my thinking, and that is, why shouldn't those organizations that have money that represent the common worker be more powerful than the organizations that represent Wall Street? If I got to pick a side, I know which one I'm picking. Kathleen, what do you think?
Hi. I just actually wanted to add to what Dan said about the convention, that there is a procedure in place to prevent runaway conventions, and that it's the majority that would decide this. It's not a fringe group. And I just wanted to point out that there are two ways to address this situation of the Supreme Court rulings, to declare that human beings are entitled to First Amendment rights and that money is not free speech. The two choices we have are Congress can fix it by passing a law. Now, considering what we're trying to fix, Congress has a conflict of interest, like the most conflicted interest in this area. Or our other choice is to call an Article 5 convention in the states and let the people have their voice and fix the problem themselves. We've had amendments proposed before. I mean, and one of them got within one vote shy of two-thirds of the states. Congress has preemptively acted on the very legislation the states pursue every time. Every time they've acted preemptively. They didn't want a convention to happen. So that's why I think this is possible, is it won't take much. It won't take much. It's getting two-thirds of the country's states to agree to this. That's it. That's not a lot. So anyway, I just wanted to address the runaway convention idea.
Well,
and
Kathleen,
our choices.
No,
just our choices to fix this, that they're limited.
I want to thank you for those thoughts. You obviously are an extremely well-informed and engaged citizen. That's the kind of people that the United States needs these days. I'm going to actually take that as your closing remark, as we're beginning to run short on time. And if I know these two guys, they're going to need every bit of the last 3 minutes to get their last words in. So, Dan, I'm going to pass it over to you first, and then we'll close out with you, John. Dan, anything you'd like to add as we wind things down here?
Nope. Just love the process. Love the discussion. Phenomenal job, Greg. I certainly hope that if I'm ever not available for my radio show, you can fill in for me.
Coffee party on, brother.
Yes, sir.
John, closing thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, first, I do disagree with Kathleen. I mean, this has already happened before. It happened with the prohibition of alcohol, and they didn't call a convention. This was it was, you can have an individual issue, and it can, if it gets a certain amount of votes, it was overturned. They didn't call a constitutional convention for that, so that can't happen. And then also, it can be overturned by the Supreme Court, and the biggest precedent for that is Plessy versus Ferguson was overturned by Brown versus the Board of Education. This happened in 1954. So, I mean, I think that is actually the easiest way for this to happen, is that Democrats will win. They'll appoint liberal judges, and they already have four judges right now that are opposed to Citizens United. They're opposed to McCutcheon, and that this will be overturned politically, just as a matter of a fact of saying that we disagree with the previous decision, just like Brown versus the Board of Education disagreed with Plessy versus Ferguson. There are other precedents also, but I mean that's the most popular one, and that is much more likely than having a constitutional convention. Because
John, I want to thank you as always. I'm going to leave it there. Thank you as always for your activism, your participation, your thoughtful comments and information that you share with all of us. and I'll leave everyone else. And thank you all for participating. Thank you for listening. Share the word and get the word out about the coffee party. We can make a difference if we work together. And just as a final thought, too, Dan had talked about this in his show on Monday. More than half of us are no longer seeing Congress as representative of who we are. We're the ones who have to change that. They're not going to change it on their own. So, again, I want to thank everybody for calling in today. John, Dan, Kathleen, thanks for your contribution. Everybody who's listening online and who will hear this later, check out the Coffee Party at coffeepartyusa.com and have yourselves a great Saturday.